Hello and welcome to Yelling at the Screen. Tonight, we discuss the film that dared to pit itself against Star Wars 7. It's bloody, it's really long, and it is solely responsible for my fear of coffee. Quentin Tarantino's The Hateful 9 or 10, I'd say. I can't say 8. I can't honestly say 8. I'm Tom Chukas. Joining me today is Charlotte Loy, Sarah Alcock, and Rob Kane. Just a quick note that this will contain spoilers, so if you haven't seen The Hateful 8, please keep listening anyway. We do need the ratings. So guys, The Hateful Eight. My God, was it long? What were your thoughts
long.
On that? Oh my God.
I was losing faith.
I thought it
end.
Was perfectly paced, so, you know, just going to be on the outside here.
Oh, really?
I really liked it.
Yeah, perfectly paced in the sense the first half is, general talking and general all that, and then the second half...
It's building.
I can't really describe it with words. Yeah. It just has to be... No.
Yeah, I was losing faith after the very, very, very long introduction, but
God, it was just a slow zoom out as well.
Yeah, then towards the end, I was like, oh my God, no.
I think the zoom out really helped with the whole Jesus. That was good. I mean, I'm not describing it very well, but you zoom out from Jesus on a crucifix and it's like, ooh, wow, meaning.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not artistic enough to get the meaning, but I've certainly smelt it there. That was,
There's some sense of meaning in the slowly zooming out. And then, oh my God, as soon as the title came on, you know, I'm fine with the fact that he likes to advertise that this is his eighth film and this is the eighth film he's made and The Hateful Eight and all that. That's quite a fine advertising gimmick. But when it's on the title of your film, the first thing you have to point out, it's my eighth film, guys. I'm still alive. Which, you know, counting the fact that it's based on eight people, I can't really honestly say that there are just eight people in here. Do you agree? I mean...
Oh, yeah. Well, there's definitely more than eight characters, to be sure. But I think the title refers to basically the main eight characters of the film. I mean, I think the extra couple that they had, if I remember correctly, was... I think it was an attendant at the... just the general attendance at the barn where they stayed. And I think the driver, I don't think was one of the eight as well.
I count the driver. I think he had as much to play as Kurt Russell's character, obviously, who just kind of came in, said something nasty, and then died. So I don't know. I think one thing that did sort of annoy me is that when you really think about it, it's basically Reservoir Dogs set in the West.
Agree with that? I'd say there are definitely similarities, but the title is The Hateful Eight, so it's not necessarily there are eight people in this film. It's those you would describe as hateful people.
Yeah. Are they really that hateful, though?
Maybe even the guys you liked.
I think all the blood.
You're pretty... Yeah. You're an awful human being, but you're very entertaining and you're amazing.
I think all the blood kind of... It wasn't a... Yeah. Oh, the loveful eight and just all this blood stuff.
The huggable eight.
Yeah. I mean, even... Oh, that nice old man... Oh, no, he killed so many.
Oh, yes. Oh. Yes, he did. You're just so regressing.
As for Tarantino being, you know, my eighth film, I'm so great. To be fair, it's Quentin Tarantino. I sort of expect this at this point.
Yeah, but I mean, is it technically... I mean, it depends. Do you guys count, like, Kill Bill as one film or two?
Really? I've never seen it, so I wouldn't... I
didn't. Well, it's still two films, but it was one of those films that was so long that they had to split it into two, so there's kind of a controversy there. Not to mention he directed a bit of Four Rooms, which they're not counting. He also wrote, you know, Natural Born Killers and True Romance. And From Dusk Till Dawn. So, I don't know, does that count? I think you're just being a bit too specific.
He did
there
that one episode of CSI as well.
Did he?
Yeah. With the coffin. Nick's buried alive.
I've never seen an episode of CSI,
like,
but I'm just intrigued.
They made it into a film because Quentin Tarantino was like, I want to do an episode. And then he like pitched the idea and they were like, that's way too long for just an episode. So they made it into like a separate movie.
There was also that short collaboration he did where he put out Death Proof. And then there was that other one, which I believe Robert Rodriguez
Grindhouse.
Made. Yeah, Grindhouse. So it was a mix of Planet Terror and Death Proof. So, you know, just sort of put them together side by side. Yeah, way back in 2006. I believe it was. So that was another little collaboration that he did.
So yeah, his eighth film. We're just going to cut all ties, let's just say the eighth, and then move on. But yeah, it is basically Reservoir Dogs. I can never get that out of my mind, especially since they put Tim Roth in there and the whole murder mystery thing. I thought, I know where this is going.
I mean, was Reservoir Dogs so much a murder mystery as The Hateful Eight?
Come on, it was a mystery in a contained room with Tim Roth. That's as close as I got.
Oh, no, it definitely was. For example, what is it? Donoghue's Secret. That whole bit was very different to Reservoir Dogs. And he actually does his own narration. By the way, guys, I'm going to stop the film.
I noticed that. They just had to fit the cameo in somewhere. That narration felt kind of out of place for me.
It really threw me, but I still actually quite liked it. So I just keep going back to that.
Yeah. It felt like, you know, Tarantino could have been someone else. He could have been Bob the Mexican. I think he would have worked well as a Mexican.
Bob the Mexican was my favourite character.
He's done Australian. I think he can handle Mexican.
There was also the return of Michael Madsen as well, had also been in Kill Bill and, a couple of other films over the years. So he was, I always thought he was kind of like the rogue kind of character, always just sitting off to the side, minding his own business and that. Yeah. I mean, I kind of felt like I gravitated towards him a little bit, even though the eventual reveal obviously puts him on the opposite side. So,
yeah, did he do much though? And was he even that hateful? In all honesty, he seemed so lovely. He was just there with his book, minding his own business as well. So no, I wouldn't say hateful. The Hateful Seven plus Michael Madsen. Yay, the huggable one.
Nah, they're all pretty. I mean, I wouldn't like to go have a meal with them. Well, for obvious reasons.
Yeah,
in fact.
Mainly not coffee. Mainly not coffee.
No.
People accusing each other. It turns out most of them. Oh, just that end bit though is very clever, and it's got sort of everyone against the wall, and they've got to decide who can they trust, who can they not trust, and then you go straight even to before your beginning of the film, and then you see, oh, I can't trust anyone. But yeah, obviously, sort of the good side, inverted commas, don't know that. So yeah.
I always thought the film sort of turned into kind of like a version of Cluedo. Did anyone ever play that old
Tarantino's Cluedo?
Yes, yeah, exactly. Basically, you know, you think someone's you have a traitor in your midst. You try and figure out who it is, but it's not that person. It's not that person. And then it just kind of builds up as it goes along. And I don't know if anyone's really played that board game
much. I would love that if they made a version of Cluedo based around Tarantino characters.
Imagine.
Samuel L. Jackson in the room with the burger.
Oh yeah, imagine the bloodshed.
Uma Thurman with the katana. Bruce Willis with the chainsaw. God. But obviously there's one actor who is in every Tarantino film we have to mention. Samuel L. Jackson. He's just in it because why not? Having Samuel L. Jackson not having him in a Tarantino film is just blasphemy at this point. Did you know that what's on Django? Hateful Eight initially was supposed to be some sort of sequel to Django initially, and I think that would have been an interesting twist if Samuel L. Jackson's character turned out to be an older version of Django.
He's
also planning to do. He says that this is like the second one of a trilogy of westerns that he's fallen in love with a genre. I think, oh god, where is he going to go next? Maniacal Nine.
Western. Yeah, I can.
Oh my god, yes, go like Firefly.
Space Western. Yeah, yeah. I don't know. I can sort of imagine that actually. Like an old Django still on the run after so many years since he blew up that plantation.
Yeah. And then spaceships were invented. Other than that, I'm trying to think of the other characters. I remember the sheriff.
The sheriff. The film was basically the love story between the sheriff and Samuel L. Jackson.
You just love shipping
people. Yeah, I think it was. Yeah.
Basically, it was just, they were my favourite characters. Yeah, it was a love story at the end of the day.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, with the sheriff, I can never remember his name, but I'm just going to call him Sheriff Exposition. Because that's all he did. All he did was just walk up to characters
but he seemed like a schoolboy, and he was like, oh, you're not so-and-so, are you? Oh my gosh, I love you. And then he went, oh, by the way, you did all this horrible stuff. Yeah. I'm actually not sure. That did irritate me, how he would go from loving a character to then hating them and then go straight back again.
He basically just walked up to every character and just went, well, I'll be a generic southern catchphrase. Aren't you that one guy who's going to be relevant in the plot this time? Oh, you are. And then he gets shot.
Yep.
He's so friendly.
As they all do, spoiler alert, but it's Tarantino. Pretty much every character gets shot.
I mean, they're there at the end. They're just not very happy at the end, like first aid-wise.
No,
but they have a bromance at the end. They have injuries, but they have a bromance.
We've actually just been quoting parts of the film every now and again. Just randomly. Yeah.
So they bond over hanging the final villain in the film.
That's how it's usually supposed to go. Whenever I'm on a date with someone, the first thing I talk about hanging, poisoning, all that stuff.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's the thing. That's the other thing, really. I mean, in general, in a Tarantino film, you've got these trademarks that just constantly carry over from one film to the next. You've got the exaggerated bloodshed, where the blood just splatters all over the place. And the other thing that always happens, the villain gets what they deserve. Or what they deserve in some way or another.
That tends to happen in a lot of films.
Seems that Tarantino has a way of maybe overkilling it a bit.
Yeah, but this time he's overkilling in 70 millimeter filming, which I don't know if you guys have read the script to The Hateful Eight at all. I've just been flicking through it. Another thing, you know, aside from the fact it's his eighth film, something he just hammers into the ground, it's filmed in 70mm. I read the script for The Hateful Eight. He mentions it three times in the first two pages. It's just unreal. It's just the first time, you know, we open up to a nice snowy mountain. Inglorious 70mm, we see a stagecoach coming on. Inglorious 70mm.
Definitely wanting to put a lot of emphasis on, on the 70mm part.
It's just a different part that they like to focus on. So when Avatar came out, it was non-stop. Oh, the CGI will just blow. It's better than real life now, guys. It's better. And I was like, very nice, pretty, but sorry, I don't. Technically, it means very little to me. So I just sort of go, yeah, that sounds cool.
I also thought...
cinema going public.
I always thought that Avatar was that film that kicked off the big 3D craze. I mean, 3D worked really well in Avatar. It worked really well in How to Train Your Dragon. But just about everything else, it's mostly been tacked on just to make a quick few extra quid off of it.
Do you think Tarantino would ever resort to 3D?
I doubt it.
Last resort. I'd like to see 5 years. I'd like to see him tackle that.
Would you really want to see the exaggerated bloodshed flying at, yes. through the
I wouldn't have
you.
It any other way.
Definitely. Yeah.
That's how I love to spend my Fridays.
That's why 3D was invented.
Yeah. just to increase Tarantino's bloodshed.
Visually, the film was really amazing. Just, I don't know if it was just the location or was it this amazing 70mm? I'll never know for sure. But,
it's a mystery.
Yeah, and even just sort of just seeing things, and then he would have the soundtrack in the background. So there's one bit, and they're just making a line between the milliners, to the bathroom, and then it's just like, yeah, just making a line with some posts and some string, and then they just have this really intense soundtrack in the back, and I'm like, oh gosh, someone's going to explode. Yeah. But they didn't, but it was still very cool, and just the mountains in the background.
Yeah, I remember, because it won, I don't know if any of you guys have seen the Oscars, or if you watched the Oscars at all, but it won Hateful Eight, won Best Soundtrack. And I remember it being a good soundtrack, but the only song I can actually remember is that... That's the only...
Didn't that win it for you? That was awesome.
Yes, that one song. Can any of you guys do the other songs as I have done, amazingly? No.
I just get the feeling... Which is my way of saying no.
Yeah, that was actually Ennio Morricone's first Oscar, I think it was. It's taken him this long. He's composed so many soundtracks over the years, but only now does he actually get one. I mean, everyone was talking about how Leonardo won his first.
Former club.
First Oscar club. Welcome to it.
Yay. But yeah, on that, I don't know, just the first half. You guys agree with me that the first half just... dragged, really.
No,
I
mean, do not agree.
You're weird, Charlotte.
I'm not weird.
I'm not saying... No, I don't mean as in... Obviously, the dialogue's interesting, the character's interesting, and all of that stuff, but
the storyline doesn't really... It's really slow, it's kind of like Interstellar, because Interstellar took so long to get into the actual storyline and setting everything up, and then in the end you were like, oh my god, but it just takes so long to get there.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think in general it's just the overall setup process. You know, you see the players, you find out their main characteristics, and then you chuck them all together and let the sparks fly.
You have a Tarantino movie.
It was necessary for the
film. Add Samuel Jackson and Roy Ritchie, and you got it right there.
Yeah, it was just so long. It was necessary to set up everything, but I was sat in the cinema is something gonna happen soon?
It helped you believe that you were almost there. Typical fly on the wall. Whereas some films you watch and you feel so removed because, oh, it's happened really quickly. Oh, this is gone. But I do quite like those really slow building sort of crime novels and things as well.
Yeah, I can't really honestly say I was bored. I just acknowledged that it felt like something was missing. And turns out that something was Kurt Russell vomiting blood everywhere. Yay, which is always
Will he drink it? Will he? Then he vomits all the blood.
I thought he was going to take a sip and be like, there's something amiss here. And then just... You drink it.
he just passes poison. It around to everyone. Yeah. Oh, God, how that would end.
Still downs it anyway, though.
Fabulous.
Tarantino, of course he would.
Yeah. But yeah, other than that, I don't know, how do you think it compares to, other Tarantino movies? If you look at... obviously, the one to compare it to is things like Django Unchained, because they're both Westerns and all that, but do you think... I don't know, do you think it holds up?
Linking to earlier when you mentioned Reservoir Dogs, it's got the same focus on quite a small area, so the set isn't absolutely ginormous. And before I just, I referenced it to a play... the radio show. Yeah, that'll be it. I like Reservoir Dogs, but not as much as a lot of people, just because I thought a lot of the things that people like about it are things that you get from other things. They're just not as famous, but I really like this one, and I think that might have just been the genre, it might have just been how it was laid out, but I just thought it was very good.
Yeah, I definitely enjoyed it, but it's just something with that first half. I mean, the thing about Django Unchained, and even with things like Pulp Fiction, whilst you could think it's still really long, you'd think, if I could cut out any aspects of it to make it shorter, what would I cut out? I mean, in films like Pulp Fiction and Django Unchained, you can't really think of anything to cut out, so there's not really a complaint to begin with, it's just you don't like long movies. I don't know, with The Hateful Eight, whilst I can't think of anything strictly that I would cut out, I think I would make some bits probably a bit tighter and shorter. Like, if I just had the whole film, I'd probably put it on YouTube, put it on the 1.25 speed up, and and then maybe add something there.
Yeah. I was thinking you could probably get rid of Channing Tatum. I mean, I liked him. I thought that was a good reveal. I just thought it was quite funny how, oh my gosh, Channing, oh, he's dead. Oh, okay. Right.
I feel so bad for Channing Tatum.
I got three lines.
Yeah, he's basically saying, oh my God, I'm finally in a Tarantino movie. What do I get to do? You say a few lines in French and then you get your head blown off.
Yeah, I'm definitely with you on that. I mean,
he was taking too long.
Yeah, I mean, Channing Tatum's character, I think, reminded me quite a bit of Christoph Waltz in Spectre. Now, what I mean by that is he's built up like you know, over a fair bit of the film. Like there's this guy and you're going to see him at some point and you're thinking, Oh, this guy's gonna be pretty nasty. But then he finally pops up, and you think, oh, is that it? Well, he doesn't really live up to the way you built him up, unfortunately. So, I mean, again, because his part is so small, and he doesn't really have a lot to do, and that. So yeah, in that sense, he is fairly similar.
Just as well, you mentioned Christoph Waltz with Tim Roth's character in the film. I don't know, just the way that he moved in his mannerisms. I remember he did. It's a difficult gesture to explain, but it's when he was sort of doing that. No, please, after you, Jester, where he sort of put his arms out wide and tilted his head. I looked at that and I genuinely went, that's Christoph Waltz. He's copying Christoph Waltz, which, I don't know, I think the film definitely would have benefited with Christoph Waltz, but he was probably too busy crying after Spectre.
Perhaps.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, other than that, mainly the main one who actually got nominated for Best Actress, Daisa Damergu, and that's the only way I can pronounce her name, in that way, Southern accent. I mean, there's a lot of, I've been seeing some things about controversy about her, the fact that it's quite misogynistic because, you know, there's a lot of punching this woman, to which my reply is, Tarantino's done worse.
She's also a horrible... They're all hateful eight.
And
again,
it's Western. And, so,
I mean, to be fair, every time he asked her not to do something, she would then do something and hit them. I mean, that's not a reason why you should hit someone, generally, but these characters are quite nasty and they do resort to physical violence a lot.
Yeah, and it's Western setting, so you... Can't really expect equality for everyone in Western.
Plus, Kurt Russell was the no-nonsense bounty hunter. He wasn't going to take any rubbish from anyone.
Oh, God, I still remember that scene where he just grabbed that guitar and just bashed it against the wall, like proper Dr. Cox style. Yeah. It was brilliant.
Do you know that guitar was...
Yeah, that was it was an authentic 1870s Martin,
yeah,
I believe.
Kind of an awkward moment
there. Like a proper
there.
One.
It was supposed to be a prop, but then something went wrong with the communication. They forgot to give him the prop one, so
it's quite funny because as he was smashing up, Daisy Domingue's reaction was actual genuine of the actress. And apparently, everybody was shocked apart from Tarantino, who was just watching it with some maniacal smirk, just hoping to get the reaction.
It was totally a mistake. Yeah, that prop one didn't turn up.
Yeah, totally. I've made Leonardo DiCaprio act after he smashed his hand with glass. I've done worse than this.
Yeah.
Did you know? Apparently, Daisy Domingue initially was supposed to be played by Jennifer Lawrence.
Yeah, I think she was. But I think Jennifer Lawrence was a bit too busy with like Hunger Games and that. So they went for...
That kind of links to Channing Tatum then a bit, because, I mean, it's not something you'd expect to see him in. I know he's been going into sort of more, I want to say, grown-up things since 21 Jump Street.
Big boy things.
Big boy things, yeah.
Like stripper films.
Yeah. No, there's a lot behind that film, apparently. Anyway, so I can understand why they might have gone with Jennifer Lawrence, but it's sort of... I wouldn't say new Tarantino, because he's never really stopped.
No, he actually says that he's planning to stop after 10 films.
Yeah, if we go by his current definition of 8, then
there's a lot of argument here. He's already stopped. He's just going to clarify, no, that one doesn't count. I never made that film. I've only made 2 so far.
I sneezed in that film, so it doesn't count.
10 films, a nice round number.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, aside, because do you know that they actually, I heard that Tarantino is planning to adapt this into a play?
A play.
Good. Yeah.
Yeah, awesome. I think that would work. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that would work, but I just love the idea of Tarantino taking on theatre. Oh my God, if he went to Broadway. A Tarantino Broadway musical.
Narration in the middle.
Yeah.
He just comes out on stage and just like pulls out a piece of paper, says it, walks off.
Just starts singing, breaking into a musical. There's people, and then he vomits up blood. That's how it all goes.
I just want to be part of the action, guys.
Yeah.
If we're still going on similarities and differences from films, then Pulp Fiction is sort of a collection of small stories, whereas this is sort of one story.
Yeah.
It's not even linear, because obviously you do that, jump back and, here it is, and yeah.
Yeah, and it definitely borrows that thing from Kill Bill, where it uses chapters, which I thought was quite nice. Although, like I said, I read the script quite recently, and usually, you know, if there's some scriptwriters listening who want to correct me, fair enough. But my understanding is that with something like that, you're supposed to just write, in one sense, title card, colon, chapter one, something haberdashery. Not Tarantino. Tarantino gets a whole page and he gets a giant pen and he just writes out the chapter like a 5-year-old child. It's just, reading his scripts are just fantastic. You know, there's some just essence of fun in every script. Mm,
yeah, it's a fairly old-fashioned way of storytelling, actually. I think a lot of other reviewers have picked up on it, saying, that it brings back a lot of sort of these old kind of techniques, which definitely manages to set it apart. I mean, personally, from an overall level of quality, I think it's somewhere in the middle. I mean, personally, I enjoy Django Unchained and Pulp Fiction a lot more, but, The Hateful Eight isn't half bad either. I mean, it still has a lot of good things going for it, even if Channing Tatum's performance is very basic and
it's good. It's just thing. All of 4 seconds.
Yeah.
I did forget. I saw like his name in the opening credits, and I was like, Channing Tatum. And by the time it got to his cameo, I was completely forgot that he was supposed to be in it. So I was like, wait a minute, it's Channing Tatum. And I was like, oh yeah, I saw him in the beginning, because I was like meaning to look out for it. And then it was so long, and I just got so caught up in the story. Yeah.
The whole time.
I just forgot that he was in it.
But I have to say that at the end, I think Channing Tatum's performance was mind blowing.
For those who can see,
yeah, no pun intended.
Yeah, I did
two thumbs into the mouth impressions.
And a creepy smile.
Yay, as I tend to do. That's my signature.
Sure. Actually, the one film that I sort of thought of when watching The Hateful Eight was, believe it or not, John Carpenter's The Thing.
Yeah, I think they used a song from that, didn't they?
Yeah, something like that. I mean, it's the same composer as well. I mean, Ennio Morricone also did the soundtrack for The Thing way back in 1982 as well. And the thing is, it's a very similar atmosphere. You've got, you know, cold, frigid outside that will probably kill you in minutes. But on the inside, you know, it's not much safer. You know, all the characters are holed up together, and they end up growing more apprehensive of each other as things go on. So yeah,
separating the room at one point didn't really work. Going back to sort of retro techniques, I thought it was quite interesting because I've noticed that in Star Wars, but I think that was obviously a hark back to sort of the earlier movies and before things went a little bit sideways, I think it's fair to say. Mm-hmm. So they would do sort of the screen wipes and things exactly like the 80s version. Mm. And so I just thought that was quite a good link. Apart from that, slightly different films.
Yeah.
Just a little.
Yeah, well, I think overall, whilst I can't really say it's his best film, and a lot of people seem to agree, because, I mean, it's got like lower ratings on things like Rotten Tomatoes. I found it quite ironic that for all we say that, you know, he advertised it's his eighth film, Hateful Eight characters. It's one of his only films that has a rating on Rotten Tomatoes that's less than 80. I feel like there's some dramatic irony in that somewhere.
Is it higher than 8?
Maybe. I'll double check. Okay.
I always think it's hard if you've been doing films for a long time, because the things that people liked originally, they're now going to see as cliche, especially if they've been used by other people. Yeah. And so it's always quite tricky. And personally, I really didn't like Inglourious Bastards, but that was sort of that was the first Tarantino film that I saw. So I don't know if it was almost like a culture shock, and I didn't like the style and I didn't like that. And then by the time I got to when I watched Pulp Fiction, which is my third one, I really changed and I really like that. So I need to go back to Inglourious Basterds, see if I just sort of didn't like it because I didn't like it, or if I generally just didn't like it.
Yeah, I guess it can take some doing to get into Tarantino's style, because it's one of the most sort of patented styles that a filmmaker has ever produced, really. I mean, it's pretty much shot on through every single one of his films in some way or another. And I think depending on which film you start off with, it can be a bit jarring at first. I don't know if there's a particular order that people recommend you watch his films in, or whether you should just start with Reservoir Dogs and work your way up, but yeah, I suppose there is that.
Yeah, because I personally, the first one I ever watched was Django Unchained, which, you know, was a very balls-to-the-wall action movie, and then the second one I watched was Pulp Fiction. I just found myself, you know, the first time I watched Pulp Fiction, I thought, yeah, it was all right, it was fine, it was very, had a lot of dialogue in it. This was before I was like, I actually knew about film, so, you know, talking wasn't my strong suit, but once, I don't know, part of me just really wanted to watch it a second time, and after I did, I realised, A, that burger scene is by far one of the best scenes in cinema. I really wish that Samuel L. Jackson replicated that in The Hateful Eight. That would have been awesome.
Well, aren't they meant to be set in the same universe, or is this one of the internet theories that are going around these days?
Tarantino actually recently talked about that theory. Apparently he has two universes, which is quite nice. One that has Reservoir Dogs and Pulp Fiction, whereas another universe has, you know, Inglourious and Django, and links to all of that, which I
Tarantino cannot fit himself inside one universe.
He has his, to have
his
one.
His ego is so big, has to fit into two. All right, so, you know, do you think after, you know, 3 hours of watching, are there any particular scenes that, you know, stand out to you and that one that you'll just remember?
Well, there's that one that nearly put our housemate just off the entire film. Samuel L. Jackson in the snow. You know that scene.
Oh, yes.
That one.
That lovely
that
scene.
That can be referred to just as that scene, because you just... I mean, up until that point, you're like, oh, yeah, you're quite a cool guy. Mm. Yeah, you've had some bad things. I know you've killed people. But yeah, and then you're like, oh, my gosh, okay, right. And he did all of that to a guy because he was someone's son.
Yeah.
I mean, again, the son wasn't very nice because he was planning to kill someone. Mm. But, yeah, so I think that is... I thought that was a very powerful scene. I didn't want to say good.
It was very grisly, yeah. I thought.
Yeah. But, oh, actually, linking to sort of the slow build and everything, I thought that it made everything that happens at the end sort of even more spectacular.
Yeah,
that is true.
Yeah.
If it had just rushed into it straight away, you'd have been like, that was good, but it's because it took... So it was like so slow, and then you were a bit like, oh, and then it was like, wait, what? And it was just like blood and gore and death.
Imagine the blood vomit, but at the end, you wouldn't even notice. You would not even care.
Yeah.
The whole room is covered with more blood than people. Wait, no. Wallpaper.
Yeah, okay. I guess it's literally just like once they get into that cabin, the movie officially begins, you know, really, you know, and tension starts building, people start mistrusting each other, and that's when it becomes, that's when you get invested into it. That's what I found anyway.
Yeah, because I found mainly with the carriage sequence, as soon as, you know, he gave him the Lincoln letter to read and Daisy spat on it, and then Samuel L. Jackson just punched her, all I thought was, there's Tarantino.
Probably laughed way too hard at that scene.
Yeah, sad not to. But yeah, there was part of me that remembered, I mean, you know, introduction to the character was all really good. I mean, with, you know, with Kurt Russell and Samuel L. Jackson, I don't know, something about that scene, you might disagree with me in terms of, you know, cinematography and all that, but if... Instantly. Thank you.
It's a temptation whenever people say it like that. But sorry,
that's comforting. But I don't know. I felt like that scene, it felt like it was unnecessarily dragged. And I mean, cinematography, I mean, camera didn't really move around a lot. Not a lot was done with it. It just felt like basic stills, in my opinion, which kind of...
Isn't that quite interesting cinematography? Nope, we'll just go with cinema stuff. yep.
Well, yeah. But I don't know. Part of me, it just, whenever I watched that scene, what was in my mind was just... like Wes Anderson films, it felt like it was going by that sort of style, which, I don't know, just felt out of place for me.
I still think it helps with the whole fly in the wall situation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I suppose that's fine. I mean, even with the introduction of the sheriff character, I genuinely remember when I saw, because obviously we didn't know it was a sheriff when we saw him at the distance, but there's a little figure shouting there, that for a millisecond, there was a genuine part of me that went, is that Leonardo DiCaprio from The Revenant? I just think, what a crossover that would have been.
Trippy.
Tarantino directs The Revenant.
That was great. And you just watch him and you're like, oh, he's so far away. But I think that's quite a good metaphor for the whole film, as you're like, oh, this is going to take ages, him getting from here to there. And then, oh, it didn't really, because I was entertained the whole time.
What do you guys think of the actual reveal of the mystery at the end, that all four of these characters are just completely in on it?
I hadn't guessed that, so I was like, whoa, that's actually weird. Because I was just looking for the one character. And then when it was all four, I was like, okay, I'm really shocked at this.
Well, it sort of worked on your idea that, oh, it can't be everyone in the millinery, because it makes more sense that it will just be a small amount of the people. But then when you go, oh, they've killed sort of all the original people who were in the millinery, they're in the well now. But yeah, and they even say, they're like, oh, it could be one of them, it could even be two of them. And then they go, it could even be all of them. And you're like, oh, but that's so far-fetched. And then it works really well. And you sort of think, if I was planning something like this, which I'm not.
On the other hand.
As many people as possible. Yeah. And then just the old guy gets in just because he's like, so old guy, you know, I've obviously killed everyone around you. Do you think you could stay here, keep the aesthetic? And he's just like, I don't freaking care what you do, but just... I need to do this thing, and then later he gets killed anyway.
Yeah,
I think
justice is served.
I knew there was something going on, but the way they revealed it, I thought was really nice.
One red jelly bean.
I mean, I think in general, the way it just sort of flashes back and shows you what happened before those eight characters all got there was pretty good. I mean, that's another thing that Tarantino's done, just sort of tell his stories out of order, just sort of jump back and forth between different things.
Yeah, sort of non-linear storyline.
Yeah,
but I don't know. Part of me just felt like I was kind of hoping for something a bit more intricate, like maybe each character had their own motivation, but maybe some interfered with others, rather than all four of these people did it. Yay! Just all that. I don't know. It just felt kind of... I don't want to say lazy, but it felt like they just kind of revealed all of it, and there was less... Because, you know, usually with a mystery, the audience is supposed to speculate, okay, maybe this person done it because of this, but this person done it kind of that. But that lasted, what, 20 minutes?
That makes it very Cluedo, though.
Yeah, exactly.
And, especially, I like it at the end, and you see how close of a gang they must have been, because they're busy sort of going, well, I'll die, so you can use my body instead, and that's the reward money on top of that, and just save her. And it was like, well, that's almost sweet, except you're all, again, awful people. Yeah, so I think it showed...
They probably made it simpler so they could spend more time just killing everyone in very violent
ways.
That's true. Because if they had done like a really intricate, oh, these people have this motive, but these people have this motive, then they'd have to spend more time either doing the flashbacks to their motivations, trying to explain all the links together. Whereas this one, it's like, oh, we're in the same gang. Let's all die very horribly. And all of this blood.
Yeah. That was a part of me. I think one thing I'm thinking of, you know, at the end when they say, when the sheriff sort of picks apart Domingue's theory that, okay, there aren't gang members here and they're all going to do this, so if I shoot you and we'll do that. So to him, he thinks he's fine. I would have loved to see like a post-credit scene where they're just lying together and gang members come and then he just goes, oh, forgot, and then just cuts the credits.
Well, apparently Reservoir Dogs ends with all of them dying. So at one point you're like, oh, did Mr. Pink get away? Because he like leaves. But if you listen, or there's just like a bit where it's really quiet, but the police shoot him. Yeah. And so that's just like a hidden extra. Yeah. So I just thought if they had, it's hidden whatever the ending is, because he goes, oh, I don't think it's this. But she never sort of, she's already said her piece. Mm. You don't ever actually find out if the gang members are out there. You hope they're not. I mean, everyone's screwed anyway. Mm. But it's like final victory, yes.
Yeah. But just a fun fact. You mentioned, you know, Mr. Pink, Steve Buscemi in Reservoir Dogs. You know that in Pulp Fiction, do you remember the scene where John Travolta and Uma Thurman, they're sort of in the diner and the waiter comes to him? That's, you know, carried by Steve Buscemi. And there's a theory that that is Mr. Pink, who, after he, you know, stole the diamonds, he became a waiter undercover, which is quite... Which is quite funny, considering the opening of Reservoir Dogs, when he keeps saying, I don't tip waiters, because now they don't do a very good job. So, I don't know, I like that to be true. I'd like that to be true. I think, I don't know, they should just link put Steve
Which universe was this in again? Does it link?
I don't know.
Tell us, Tarantino.
There are so many universes. No one infinite mass can hold the ego of Tarantino.
Maybe after the 10th film, he'll just turn around and say, oh, yep, you know, it was all in the same universe, all part of the plan, you know, just all of my films have just these little tiny connections in there. You should go back and watch them again.
Yeah, just the final film is a giant crossover and all of the characters are
I would love like an interdimensional battle, Fate Zero.
All of Tarantino's fans would be just lining up in droves to see something like that.
Yeah. I would love to see like a sort of like a sequel, sort of a Da Vinci Code kind of thing, where somebody goes on epic quest to link the secret behind all of Tarantino's movies. Mm.
Just have a weird artifact from all of the films.
Yeah. One like, you know, what we have, one burger, one afro, one katana blade. I don't know, just mystical.
Sounds like a very weird evening.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you'd be surprised. That's typically
some heroin, that one, yep.
Yeah.
That bit, oh, I squealed so bad and they just shove it in her chest. Anyway.
Oh, God, no.
Watching that film with other people who have watched that film is quite funny because about 2 seconds before whatever's going to happen, they always go, oh, and you know from that. It's like just before you do sort of a horrible roller coaster turn.
Yeah.
Oh, you're just like, oh, no, something bad is about to happen.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But that Tarantino is full of that.
Yeah.
Or even them, what is it? Which film? Pulp Fiction.
Yeah.
And he just turns around with a loaded gun. And I remember turning to, you know, Sam. Mm-hmm. And I just went, oh, he shouldn't do that. It's probably not on safety. And then the kid's head explodes. And I just kind of couldn't speak for about a minute as I went, ah. But yeah.
Did it break your concentration? It had to be said.
I was, if anything, more focused.
Yeah. So yeah, I mean, aside from, you know, scenes we've all liked, are there any scenes you didn't like? I mean, Charlotte, you've, you say that you clearly like the film and you're defending it, which, you know, is good. I like that someone's fully defending
pace, but the thing is, I don't know if people really have things against the pace, that is fine. People are entitled to their own opinion. I'm not going to kill anyone that I live with about that, am I, Sarah?
Definitely not.
No.
I just have to sleep with one eye open.
Yeah, I mean, can you think of any scenes that you maybe thought you could have cut out or maybe could have been shortened in that way?
I can't really think of too much myself. I mean, sometimes films, if they drag on for too long, because they keep on trying to throw more filler material at the screen. But honestly, with The Hateful Eight, I didn't really feel that was the case. I mean, I didn't mind the length. I thought every scene worked out really well. And yeah, that's about all there is, really.
Even stuff that you thought was a bit, oh, well, there's not much point. I see what you're getting at. And, you know, for example, when he's explaining to Bob the Mexican, and he's going, oh, you said Minnie just left you in charge? And then you're sort of getting it, oh, he doesn't really believe that, we get it. But a bit later, and he explains about the sign and all of that, and then it just comes out, and it's like, oh, well, this all linked, and it got a lot darker much quicker, and then it obviously had built from that. So I thought that was good.
Yeah, all I'd say is just, I still think the beginning bit was a bit too long for me, So if it could just be shortened a little bit, like seeing the ending, it was worth the slow build up. But still, I was losing faith a little bit in the middle. But yeah, not by very long, because I like the fact that it was the quite long...
It doesn't offend me when you say that. That is A-okay.
Yeah, the quite long build-up, and then the end was just so shocking, but it was a little bit too long for me.
Yeah. Like I said, I don't really have too much complaints in terms of pace. It's maybe just personal taste. Naturally, you'd like it just to speed up a little bit, or maybe when, you know, somebody gets punched here, maybe someone gets shot there. I don't know. Maybe I'm just a masochist.
It would be interesting if I watched it again, because obviously now I know what's going to happen. So will I feel that it drags more, or... I don't know. Just have to buy me it for my birthday, guys.
What would you like to see Tarantino do next? I mean, he's tackled a hell of a lot of, you know, genres and that sort of stuff.
I want a sequel, but with just the sheriff and Samuel L. Jackson.
As a
bromance.
You want them just lying just, in bed lovingly. Yeah.
Just travelling the
Three
world
hours
together.
Of that.
Somehow I doubt that's going to happen, considering how the film ended. But
yeah. You never know.
Dead yet, you
never know.
Yeah.
You never know.
No, Tarantino's never done science fiction before. I mean, that could be something that he could apply his style to, and it could really work. I mean, he's done crime. I mean, Kill Bill Volume 1 was more like a samurai film, whereas Volume 2 was more like a western. Again, you've got Inglourious Basterds, which was mostly a war film. So, I don't know, maybe between fantasy or science fiction, who knows what he could do with that.
Yeah,
I'd be interested.
Yeah, I think I'd like him to tackle something that he has, you know, never tackled before. I'd love to see him do like a British rom-com with Hugh Grant.
That would be amazing.
In his own action style. He actually said he said that something he'd like to tackle is to do a horror film. Actually, can you imagine that? A Tarantino horror film?
Yeah, it could
I think
work.
That would be
heavy on the gore.
Yeah.
I think because, you know, when you talk about gore with this film, because with other films like Pulp Fiction or Django Unchained, the kind of gore that, you know, in and that going on is very sort of hell yeah kind of gore in that fun sort of sense. This one is proper guts everywhere and just Jesus Christ. It did take me by surprise, which is strange considering, you know, how much of a Tarantino fan I am. But
yeah, I don't know. I mean, Hateful Eight could be Tarantino's bloodiest film yet. I don't know if he does a horror film, he might want to try and take us back to the days of practical effects, because I mean, films like The Thing and The Fly, they did a really good job of just grossing the audience out with all of their practical models and that.
Yeah, definitely. All right, so I say we'll wrap this up. So just I don't know, just overall opinions of the film. Would you recommend it to a friend? Do you think it holds up as a Tarantino movie? Do you think he's still got it, or do you think he might be dwindling? What are your thoughts?
Don't think he's dwindling, because obviously I have the opposite reaction, that I like this more than some of his previous films. Yeah, just generally quite a good film. All the things we've mentioned are good points, so if you don't like dragging films, if you don't like long films, if you don't like being slightly worried that all the people you know have been replaced by a murderous gang, I mean, things like that, the normal, yeah.
No, yeah, I'd recommend it. I really liked it. If they didn't like gore, I'd be a bit like, kind of close your eyes a bit at the end. But I'd tell everyone to watch it. Yeah.
Well, if you're a fan of Tarantino, then you've probably already seen it maybe once, twice, or three times already. For the casual viewer, I'd say it may not be the sort of thing you'd want to watch more than once. But at the same time, what's here is really good, as always. I mean, I gave it a 4 out of 5 when I wrote a little review for it. In the end, Hateful Eight, definitely recommend seeing it.
Yeah, I definitely recommend it as well, especially if you're a Tarantino fan, because whilst I can say that I might not like it as much as things like Pulp Fiction or Django and Chain, it's definitely still fun, it's definitely still entertaining, and it still definitely has all the blood and racial slurs that your heart desires. So
don't forget hitting people.
Yes.
I was going to say women, but then I was like, well, they weren't hitting her because she was a woman. They were just sort of hitting.
Yeah, in general. It's more utilitarian general. Violence.
Yeah.
Yay. All right, so thank you for listening. I've been Tom Chukas. Special thanks to Charlotte Loy, Sarah Alcock, and Rob Kane. All right, see you next time, guys.
See you.
Thank you all.
Goodbye.